Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands for the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Even!
Yes, you got that petition out the wheel if you're rolling down the road today, because you're listening to Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show geared to you, you gearheads out there, with your co-host, Ray Guarino. Joe D is not with us today, but in his place, he said to me, Ray, you know what I want you to do? I want you to get that guy. You know that guy? And I said, yeah, what guy, Joe? You know the guy. He goes, you know the guy. The guy that does the appraisal stuff. The guy that's really smart. He has all the old cars. He knows that stuff. I'm like, Wayne Carini. He said, no. That other guy. I said, oh, Steve Linden. So we do have Mr. Steve Linden in the studio with us today. Thank you, Steve, for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's great. We like to keep you in rotation and do that kind of stuff because there's so much to talk about. And I will start off by saying if people want to call and speak to you, because they speak to us all the time, they can get us on the phone. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Or you can follow us certainly on our social media platforms, on our website, on Twitter and Facebook is Motormouth Radio. And on Instagram is Joe's favorite, which is real_Motormouth Radio. And that's where we post pictures of things that we get involved with during the week. We work in the shops and different projects we get involved in. We put our stuff. I kind of like Instagram. I took a liking to it because it's picture-based. And you should definitely check the website because there's always new articles going up. We're talking about tire safety and winter driving. We're kind of transitioning into that because of the seasonal change. But give us a call, 516-572-7440. Steve, you know, we were one of the things, of course, that how people get to see you regularly is through your column in Newsday. And I read it every week, and I always smile because it's always, you know, now being like when people are regular listeners to the show, they tell me, oh, yeah, I've heard you talk about that before. And now I can tell like, oh, yeah, Steve is revisiting a topic. But it's good because I think for the new people, they need to see or read what they hadn't seen in the past. So what's happening in the world of coverage these days? What's your mindset like? What are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm kind of focused in on the world of of antique, classic, collectible cars, and there's a lot going on. The interesting part of what's going on to me is that I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. Uh-huh. The whole collector car market is changing in that it's going off in two different directions. Collectors, but for the last few years, we've seen sophisticated investors and sophisticated collectors get in, and it's in a way it's good because the prices of a lot of these cars are coming off. Probably 90% of the market is coming off in value, and the very, very, very special cars are going up in value. Okay. But the very, very special cars are probably the ones we wouldn't want to drive and enjoy anyway.
Yeah. I guess like the doozies and the stuff that's like the real high end type of stuff that's really almost museum quality cars.
It's not even necessarily high end. You know, it kind of goes to something you and I were talking about before the show. It's special. There are investors all over the world and collectors all over the world now. People used to say, I like Ferraris or I like Chevys or I like Fords or whatever it happens to be. Right. Now people are saying, I will buy anything that has less than 10,000 miles on it, has the original paint and has all the documentation, and I don't care what it is.
Got it.
And they're passing on everything else.
Yeah.
So.
And we were speaking about a fellow that I know who does that, and he buys almost anything as long as it's got low miles.
Right.
And he doesn't really care. He's not you look at his collection, and it's not mark driven. It's basically a little bit of everything, and you say, wow, yeah. that makes it's a more interesting collection.
You know, not only is it a more interesting collection, but because investors are getting into the market now, I've had an exposure and an education that I never had before. And when you walk into somebody who has a collection of, it could be anything, Chevys, Ferraris, whatever, and they say, this is my investment for the future, you kind of look at them and you say, well, you know, that's a beautiful collection of Chevys, but what if Chevys go down in price? Or what if Ferraris go down in price? But when somebody's buying a little bit of everything, I've learned from investors, there's a name for that, and it's diversification.
And just like in the money markets, most people who know don't have all their money in one investiture. There's bonds, there's stocks.
Exactly.
There's, it's right. So it's the same thing. And it's treating the cars as an entity that we never thought of growing up because these things were just cars.
Yep. And it's a tiny percentage of the market that fits that criteria, but that's good because it means that the whole rest of the market is available at, compared to 5 years ago's prices, it discounted prices for everyone to enjoy.
Now, what do you think? This comes up all the time where people say the new buzzword is, yeah, but, Barrett Jackson killed it for everybody. And I think I agree with that to a point because I watch those shows. I watch the auction shows and say, wow, man, those cars are bringing that kind of money now. And I don't know. I've seen it translate to local ads where guys will say, one sold at Barrett Jackson for, say, $30,000, so I want, 28 for mine. And I think it's certainly an unfair comparison because, first of all, the guy didn't see the one at Barrett Jackson, and we're not seeing his. So I think there's a lot of that. It's kind of like, the old terms people used to use, like when you read it in bylines, oh, the car is mint. And I would say, oh, what shade of green is it? Because I'm sure it's not perfect like you're alluding to, sir.
Yeah. Yep.
So do you think that the TV shows and the auction shows have done that? Is it watered down or changed?
Well, it's changed people's perceptions of what they think their cars are worth.
Bingo. Yeah.
But I always say these auction companies, whether it's Barrett Jackson, Mecham, RM, Sotheby's, Christie's, Gooding, the interesting part to me is that they're auction companies second, they're marketing companies first. And I can't think of a business that does a better job of marketing than them.
Oh, yeah.
And what you don't see with them, and this is to their credit, is everybody sees these cars that sell at these really tremendous values, but you see the Friday night, the Saturday auctions.
Yeah.
You don't see the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday where cars are going like it's a used car lot.
Right.
So, as an appraiser, my job is to do the research when I appraise a car, and you will see that one car, whatever it happens to be, that sold for $100,000, but then you'll see nine more of exactly the same car that sold for $50,000.
Yeah. In a recent column, you talked about that, the difference between about having to find comps for cars.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a car that you couldn't find a comp for.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that interesting. Was that the one that was it a car and a motorcycle that you couldn't find a comp for either?
Yeah.
Because you didn't give the name of the brand. You kind of kept it, on the down low. But it had me thinking of like, wow, what could that be?
Yeah, right. And in this particular case, which is unusual, I actually can't say it because there's literally like one or two of these cars and this motorcycle in the world. Wow. And that would give away the owner.
Okay. Well.
So I can't. But there are occasionally cars that you can find comps for. It's really extremely rare. I get calls from people all the time who say to me, are you going to be able to appraise my car? It's one of one.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, what makes it one of one? And they say to me, well, it's the only 1970 Firebird that was produced in blue with no radio and heater delete. And, it's not going to be a problem. We'll be able to find comps.
Yes, absolutely.
They're called comparables. They're not called exacts.
Yeah, right. And you mentioned that in the article, which was very, very good. Because it's, again, people tend to follow trends and they make their own trends up. And, but like I said, with that whole thing with the auction shows, it was the same thing I heard from eBay killed it for everybody now because now they killed they kind of did kill the swap because instead of a guy going out to a hole in his junk to a swap meet, you could sell it on eBay, so the stuff isn't at the swap meets anymore. Now there's more kitchen sinks and sundries. I've seen that personally. I
think it's true, but I think it's just basic economics. I think it's supply and demand, and no eBay. I got to tell you, honestly, I see both sides of it, but by the same token, when I need some obscure part for some old car or motorcycle that I'm working on, I'll go on eBay and I'll have it at my door 2 days later.
Right. Well, I think we've all done that, and I found some great deals, and I've actually sold some stuff on eBay that was like, wow, that went fast. That was
right.
So, it is. You have to become a shipping clerk, and I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Yep.
It's not just the computer part where you can list it and sell it. You have to box it and weigh it and get to the post office and do your diligence. You can't wait for 3 weeks.
You hit the nail right on the head. I get people call me all the time with collections of things. Usually it's car parts, antique car parts. And they say, somebody told me this collection's worth $100,000.
Yep.
And I'll say, well, it may be, but it's $100,000, $10 at a time.
Yeah.
And you have to pack each one, like you just said. You have to bring it to the post office. You have to, and you have to list it on eBay and try to sell it.
Right.
And sometimes you're just better off just selling it to somebody who will walk in and buy the whole thing.
And sell a case lot for what you think is a reduced, but it's money in hand today,
and
you're done with it.
And what's your time worth packing every one of these things and bringing it to the post office?
Sure.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think, with something like that, if you have the knowledge of what you're dealing in, you could go through and maybe cherry pick a few choice items that maybe you want to sell separately.
Right.
And then the rest just, case lot. I've worked with a couple of guys who did that. They bought and sold lots, mostly of motorcycle parts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends did it with car parts. And I had the fortune to go with them a couple times to help out. I was a help. And what's great is when they're putting together their deal and trying to bundle the stuff,
right?
I'm seeing stuff that I like. So I was able to make side deals on a few things that I wanted. And I'm like, wow, that's, it's a great world. But it's tough work. You're out there all the time.
It's always fun, like you said. It's fun. But one of the things you said before, you have to be careful of with the cherry picking. If you're the seller and you have a garage full of parts, whether it's 100 parts or 1,000 parts, you're going to get those knowledgeable people that are going to come in first. And they're going to cherry pick the 10 or 50 or 100 parts that are really, really desirable. And you're going to sell it to them. And then you're going to be left with a garage full of stuff that nobody wants and you can't get rid of.
Yeah.
And I see that all the time. So
the other fun thing is when I did the car show that me and two other guys had done on Father's Day for years, we were at the field very early and we had vendors come in, and they would set up. And you see, and I've seen this when I help people vend at swap meets. There's always those early bird guys who come in, and they're, the vendor is unloading his truck, and this guy's going through the stuff.
Yeah.
They want that. They know what they're looking for, and they want to get it first. But I've also seen, I saw my friend do this, bought 8 or 10 things from a guy, and then brought them over to his spot and put them on his spot for sale. Of course, he was marking them up a little bit. So things kind of just shift around,
You see that all the time. I don't know. Do you ever go to the car auction in Atlantic City?
I have been there, not recently. It's been a number of years I've been there.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years for me also, but it's easy, so I go. And you see that also. People will buy cars there on a Thursday or a Friday when there's no one there, and then they'll put it right back on the block on Saturday.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. If you can make a quick flip and, pocket a couple shekels, why not?
Yeah, sure.
That's cool stuff.
Yep.
But, we're going to get more. I want to talk about a little bit about... we'll talk about winterizing and things like that, because I know you covered that. Was it 2 weeks ago? I forget. Now, I know you and your time schedule, you're like, it's like a magazine editor. Like, this month isn't this month. This month is like,
exactly.
February.
Right.
So we'll get into some of that, and hopefully our listeners will chime in, too, because that is the time of the season. The weather now markedly changed on us.
Oh, yeah. Overnight.
Literally overnight.
Literally overnight, yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
I was out there in shorts last week doing stuff, and then it's like, wow, what the heck happened? I was like, geez.
Eastern Long Island had a freeze alert last night.
I know. Yeah, my wife's car, it's ironic the way it happens. Like, my wife's car in the driveway, the windows had frost on them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cars in the street had frost, but my car is under a small Japanese maple tree. It's not a big tree.
Right.
Nothing on the windows at all.
Really?
And that car in that spot, like other cars in the morning, will have dew all over them, and that car won't.
Why?
I don't know. It's that spot under that tree, and, the car across the street will have the same thing as the car in my driveway has. It's an odd phenomenon.
That's interesting.
And the car right behind it is affected like the others.
The Japanese maple must be, like, affecting the airflow or something.
I think so. It's the only thing I could reasonably think, because it's, the car under that spot. All the other cars are, like I said, this morning there were. I actually went out to get the newspapers, and I passed my wife's car and said, oh, wait a minute, I got to actually put my finger on this glass to see, is this solid or is this? And it was ice.
Yeah, really?
It was frost on those windows. Yeah, we're on the South Shore, so it was... I don't know what the North Shore was like.
It was 38 degrees this morning when I walked out.
Yeah, it was probably worse, I would imagine.
We had There was frost on, well, I don't even know if you technically call it frost, my neighbor's lawn across the street, the frost on the lawn.
Yes.
First one I've seen this year, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're going to frost our way into our first break. We're going to take a little respite here from Motormouth Radio, and we'll come back with more of Mr. Steve Linden. Steve is the classic car doctor, as known in Newsday. He does have a title. He's not wearing a badge, but he has a title. And we will come back and hopefully take some calls. So for now, let's let it roll on 90.3 WHPC.
.3 WHPC wants you to know that you can view incredible canned food structures and help fight hunger at Canstruction Long Island 2019 at RXR Plaza in Uniondale now through November 18th. You are encouraged to bring a can of food to cast your vote for the People's Choice Awards. By voting for the NCC design team and their structure called Wash Away Hunger, your donation will directly benefit the Nest Food Pantry at Nassau Community College. Other donations benefit the Interfaith Nutrition Network, Island Harvest Food Bank, and Long Island Cares, the Harry Chapin Food Bank, all to feed hungry Long Islanders. More information can be found online at canstructionli.org. That's canstructionli.org.
Nassau Community College will be holding its annual Thanksgiving Blood Drive in conjunction with the New York Blood Center on Thursday, November 14th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the multipurpose room of the CCB. For more than 45 years, Nassau Community College has been conducting these drives to assure that an adequate blood supply will be available during the holidays. There is no better way to say thanks as we enter the Thanksgiving season. Stop in on November 14th and say, "I want to give thanks by donating blood." Blood donors must be at least 17 years old and in good health. More information is available online at ncc.edu.
This is Dennis Pitzenberger from Sticker Shock, and if you're not listening to Motormouth Radio, boy, you are lost in the smoke of the burnout. Make sure to tune in each and every week because these guys are exactly what you want to hear. Real car guys, real talk every single weekend.
It's just that easy. Sometimes it looks hard, but it's easy on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Steve Linden in today, and we are talking cars. Give us a call, 516-572-7440, and we'll entertain all of your automotive questions, maladies, concerns. Talk about Steve's column. You may want to ask him about his where he gets his the impetus for the... I'll ask you, what's the impetus? Where do you get the... Every week, you know, you write a different column on... Well, the same column, but on different subjects and facets of the hobby. Has it gotten to be a bit of a drag yet to kind of find new things to write about, or?
No, it's, you know, when the deadline rolls around, it starts to get to be a little bit of pressure, but no, it's always interesting.
Hold that thought. We're going to take our own deadline. We're going to go to the phone and say, "Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths."
Hey, Ray, it's Jim. How you doing?
Good, Jim. What's happening?
Hey, not much. I got a question for Steve, and this comes... I know one of the things, you know, you're watching Barrett Jackson and stuff like that, you see these people who buy 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 cars. So my question is, for most of us who are, like, poor and, you know, looking for that just that one car, Steve, do you think that the deals are still out there, that somebody like me or Ray or somebody who just has a couple of dollars and just wants to go find out that one car... Are the deals still out there like they used to be 10, 20 years ago?
Well, are you asking, are they still out there at the auctions, or are you asking, are they still out there everywhere?
Well, basically everywhere. I mean, more like private sales. I mean, yeah, the auctions as well, because, you know, I watch Barrett Jackson straight through. I start on Tuesday just to see, and it's you know, if you watch Barrett Jackson and you watch the entire thing, you can see how the cars on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday aren't quite to the same quality as the cars that sell on Super Saturday. So you can see why the price difference there. I was more looking for, like, you know, that one old lady who has this car, has been sitting in the garage. Are those deals still out there, or are there too many investors stealing those deals from guys like us?
Well, you know, I think it's just a natural function of time. As time goes on, more and more of those special cars in the garage that you're describing are being found. So I think just as time goes on, there's going to be less and less of them. But I do still hear about them on a regular basis. And if you're not talking about specifically about those real, you know, survivors that have been sitting in a garage for 50 years, but just really bargains to be found, I think they are out there. It just depends on what you're looking for. You know, pre-war cars are often priced. I know people that are buying, you know, Model A Roadsters now, just absolutely beautiful, drop-dead, gorgeous cars for $15,000. Where can you buy that?
That's true.
So,
you know, Jim, the other thing is, to your question, we all ask that. And then I always see every month in the car magazines, another barn find. There's just always stuff out there. The country is so big, and there's so many damn barns and garages that, you know, I mean, I even told my wife before I put my car back on the road, I said, my car is considered, you can consider this a barn find or a garage find. It's been, hasn't been seen in 15, 20 years, so now it's kind of new to the scene. So they're everywhere. They really are. There's a lot of cars made. A lot crushed, but a lot made. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing is, you know, you talk about pre-war and things like that, but as time goes on, cars we didn't consider collectible maybe a few years ago are suddenly coming into the realm, and particularly cars from the 70s. You know, a lot of cars from the 70s we didn't even look at, but now all of a sudden people are like, a 73, I'm about to give you a perfect example, I just saw somebody who bought this car, a 1973 Grand Prix, it happened to be a good deal. It's like, you know, that's a car we probably would have passed up in the past, but now it's
I wouldn't have.
That's a good car. That's on my list.
Yeah.
But I will tell you one that is, I'm going to take this, cars of the 80s.
Yeah, I would agree.
Which was the dead decade as far as I'm concerned. Mike down at the shop just picked up an 86 El Camino.
Yeah.
Beautiful car.
Yeah, that piqued my interest.
Sweetheart. You know, got some rust on the low panels and fenders, but they can fix that. And it already had a Targetmaster 350 4-bolt main motor put in it, overdrive tranny that was rebuilt, all new stainless steel brake lines. It's a bucket seat console car. And the only thing in the interior that's bad is the console door is broken. Mm-hmm. Mint interior otherwise. I mean, and it's not even green, it's gray. And an older gentleman had it, and he felt... Here was the trick. He felt that the chassis was rotted. So, you know, we were actually going to do a chassis repair in this thing until we got it to the shop. You know, Mike bought it, put it up on the lift. Somebody had, like, undercoated and then maybe pour 15'd over that, and that stuff was hanging down. We peeled it off, and there was the chassis. There was no chassis rot. It was just stuff that someone had slathered on, score, 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 and he got the car at a really good price. And now he's got a cool driver.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And but there's still hope for us.
Yeah, there is.
You know where there's really hope, in my opinion? If you're not married to 1 year make and model of car, if you're not a diehard aficionado of one particular car and you're willing to be flexible, then you can find bargains. There are bargains out there.
Good point.
I agree, yeah. Because, the Ford guys and the Mopar guys and the Chevy guys, you kind of, you know, you could look for that one holy grail forever.
And that's why it's sometimes better not to be a car guy, to just want an old car and say, I like that one. It's a beautiful color. It runs great. It's in great shape. I love it. That's the car I want.
I've actually told people on the show and off, I tell them, you know what? You're not really a wrench turner. You're not a real, hardcore mechanic and maybe anymore. Maybe you used to be. I said, go find a car you had in high school. I said, if it's a four-door Maverick or a Dart or a Duster, I said, you know, you're going to a four-door Nova even. I said, you can get that car now because it's not an A-list car.
Right.
And it's going to transport you back in time because it's the car you had in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and there's your buy-in. You know, and then if it sits, you didn't spend a lot of money.
And if you're willing to take a four-door car, you're looking at 50% of the cost of the two-door version.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100% more doors for 50% of the price.
Exactly.
Hey, Steve, one last question. I know you do appraisals for people.
Yes.
I was just curious, how many times have you broken the hearts of people trying to get something for their car?
You know, before I do the appraisal for people, I kind of break them in if I have a feeling that they're going to have an unrealistic expectation as to the value. But, you know, it's my job to tell them what it's really worth. I'm not really doing them a favor if I mislead them. So not as often as you would think.
Yeah, so Steve knows how to let people off gently. He does. He's got a very good sense of tact when it comes to that. So,
yeah.
A good car side manner.
Yes, definitely.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Jim. So long. All right. That was a great questions. If you want to get in on this and ask Steve a question, 516-572-7440. All good points. That auction thing is so prevalent. I like watching the early days. I like seeing the stuff that's affordable.
Right.
You know, but then it's always amazing where even on like a Friday night, you'll see like a 32 Roadster or a 34 Roadster. Yeah, maybe it's a fiberglass car, but it'll come through and sell for like $30,000. And I'm saying, I know you can't build that car for that kind of money. You know, finished, rolling, done.
Not even close. And again, it goes to the particular genre of car that you're looking for. Pre-war cars now are a bargain. The last few years, they've come off tremendously in value.
Right.
And they're great if you want one.
Yeah. Fantastic. Our friend Glenn, the car hunter down in Tennessee, bought a 31 Ford like that. That's a great car. Mm-hmm. Let's try this again. Let's go back to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Steve.
Hey. Morning. Who are we speaking with?
This is Bob from Rockville Center.
Oh, Bob. Yeah. What's up, Bob?
I owe a couple people phone calls over there.
Yes, yes. You see, we used to have your voice down pat, and now we kind of...
I know. So I'm taking care of some family stuff, but I wanted to thank you for having this guest. You know, reading Steve's stuff for years has been really informative, and I find him to be a straight shooter.
Thank you. Yeah.
I had a question for him, and it's based upon his experience, okay? So... they're going to stop making the Camaro in 2 years, okay? Mm-hmm. I get it. Because of the sales, they'll probably never stop making the Mustang, but I like the Chevy end. I have nothing against Ford. My question to you is, should I consider waiting till they stop the production line and the Camaros are at a reputable dealer, or should I just consider, you know, spending the $5,000 or $6,000 extra and ordering it the way I want it?
Oh,
that's a good question.
That's why I gave it to you, because when I read your material, it's really you answer questions like that.
You know, that's that really. There's a lot of things that would have to go into a decision like that, and the two things that come to mind for me, and I certainly don't expect you to answer this question, but the first question that comes to mind for me is, how important is that extra $5,000 or $6,000 to you, and what do you like and what do you want? Because when people ask me, what should I do? The first question that I ask them is, what do you like? That's the most important thing. Because if you save $5,000 and get something that you don't like, or something that you could have had that could have been better, more to your liking, you're always going to regret it. But if the $5,000 or $6,000 that you mentioned isn't going to make a big difference, I think you should probably do whatever it is that you have to do to secure the car that you want.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, we're talking about the difference between a base model bones stock Camaro and a fully loaded one, and the way they do things with packages now, I mean, you get there pretty quick.
Yeah.
Are you looking at something other than that, like not the fully loaded?
Well, you know, I had ordered the last year F body, and I had to put it on the market because we were putting wooden floors in the house, and that's okay.
Right.
But I think I've arrived at what Steve had just mentioned. You know, this will be a keeper, and I don't need the fastest Camaro, but I know I want an SS. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know I want a manual. And I think he already answered, or he affirmed what where I've arrived. Lastly, the price point on a new Corvette would be not too much more expensive than a Camaro, but you know what? Anyone can go out and buy a Vette. You know what I mean? And then I think I'd rather have the manual Camaro over than a new Vette.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's kind of how you make those choices.
Right.
Yeah.
I personally would agree. I mean, I'm shocked that you can't get a manual in a new Corvette.
Yeah.
But that is what it is. And again, you know, first and foremost, if you're not buying a car as an investment, I tell people you have to buy what you like. That should be the first thing that you think
about. This is not an investment. This is something where truly everything else is done. Mm-hmm. And now this is my keeper, and this is something I can, you know, ride in second, third gear and enjoy that end of it. I don't need the fastest car in town. This is not where I'm at.
Yeah. Oh, you'll have plenty of get up and go with those cars.
Oh, yeah.
That car. It's definitely,
and you know, I don't need an 800 horsepower Hellcat.
Right.
I don't need it.
So you'll have a 650 horsepower Camaro. I got it. Yeah, you're being conservative.
I want to thank you for a great program. And, Ray, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Bob. Keep in touch.
Bye bye now.
Bye, Steve.
Bye bye.
Right. So long. Yeah, Bob brings up some good points. Definitely some good points.
Yeah, that's That's a question that I get all the time. Not necessarily as it relates to a newer car like that.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how many times I'm asked, what should I buy? What should I buy? And I always, as politely as I possibly can, I say, how can I tell you what you should buy? What do you like?
Right.
You know, what do you like? That's the first question.
Yeah. And we get that question a lot also, and questions like it.
Mm-hmm.
And you start realizing, gee, why is someone asking me what they should get?
Right.
I could see them asking me what I would buy.
Right.
But and what I do is I think, well, they're confused. They don't know. So they're really asking for more guidance than they are a definitive answer.
Yep.
And then, like you said, you provide that guidance that helps them find that definitive answer.
That's why I always, there's always three questions I tell people to ask themselves. What do you like? What are you going to use it for? How much do you want to spend?
Right,
If you like Corvettes and you have a family of six and two dogs and you're going to use it to go to the beach, you're going to have a problem.
Good point.
So those three questions will generally get it answered.
And I'll tell you what, we have to answer this question. We are going to we're going to take another break. But first, I want to mention that if you want to listen to some alternate programming on this station, which we have plenty of, tune in one of our favorites, Parfuma d'Italia. This is an Italian show. Thursdays at 5 p.m., Rita Monti brings us the best in Italian music and culture, along with poetry and interviews with Italian-American personalities.
Wow.
We've never been asked to be on it, but, you know, whatever. I think she wants real personalities. And Rita is happy to take your phone calls and requests on this live weekly show, so check it out. It's great. And we will take a quick break. We're going to, what are we going to do? We're going to listen to a little Jerry Reed, because you have to have oil and gas to drive these cars. And, you know, sometimes that we've gone through some distress at the pump where, you know, we're just talking about this last night, how gas used to be so much more expensive. And we're actually, enjoying it being a little lower now. So we'll let Jerry tell you about it a little bit. And we will be back quickly on 90.3 WHPC.
People, let me tell you some news. I sing a song called the Crude Oil Blues. We're low on heat and oil, we're low on gas. And I'm so cold, I'm about to freeze by myself. We got the Crude Oil Blues. Lord, the winter time's so getting cold to the bottom of my shoes.
This show is brought to you by On the Road Again Motorcycle School. Hi, I'm Steve Bertolini, the president of On the Road Again Motorcycle School, and I'd like to tell you that life is short, so live a little by learning how to ride a motorcycle. Classes are available from beginner riders to advanced, including private lessons. Lessons are offered on the campuses of Nassau Community College and Suffolk Community College, also offering the license waiver class, where you can skip the DMV. More information about On the Road Again Motorcycle School can be found by calling 631-862-RIDE. That's 631-862-RIDE. Or online at lrn2ride.com.
Hi, I'm Rob Leonard, host of Beatles Songs for the past 24 years right here on WHPC. Beatles Songs airs every Friday from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., playing the music of the Beatles together, apart, along with Beatle cover songs and songs the Beatles covered, along with songs a Beatle either guested on and or produced. And of course, we provide Beatle news. It's not the same show where they play the same 10 songs. So join me every Friday for Beatle Songs, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College, streaming at ncc.edu/WHPC.
Do you own a car? Or have you ever seen one? Then you might be one of the millions of Americans who suffer from "there's something wrong with my car, but mechanics cost too much itis." Call the Motor Mouse at 516-572-7440. Our trained staff of two will help. There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
I read a sign on the pump at my favorite gas station yesterday. It said, he who expected nothing ain't gonna be deceived.
Just like what you get on Motor Mouth Radio, he who asks for nothing ain't going to be deceived, with Ray Guarino, Steve Linden today manning the con, as it were. The guy I could trust the keys to if I got to go out for a bit. We can He can move stuff around for us, and we'll get him on this board one of these days, just like I had to do it.
Never.
You know, I would have said that too, but I learned to never say never. You can teach an old dog. Where did I just say that? I was just somewhere just... We were just talking about, like, a selective memory.
Right.
This just happened in the last day or two. Oh, I know what it was. I was up in McDonald's, and I had to use the digital menu to order my stuff. I said, okay, let me try this. You know, it's like I can do that stuff. And I went through it, found my combo, and it did all this. Yes. Boom, show me the price. I said, okay. I proceeded to the register, and the guy says, you know, well, what's your number? I'm like, one. Well, what's my number? Well, didn't you get a number? No. Well, did you? I said, yeah, I ordered over here at the thing. Which one? Well, that one. Really? He goes, let's go take a look. And we went around, and I said, yeah, there it is. There's my order, and there's the price. And then he hit another thing, another two or three things that had to be selected that gave you a number. I'm like, you know what? That's counterintuitive. I said, this old dog didn't learn that trick.
Right.
I said, just so you know. And he kind of gave me this little sheepish smile. And I actually wanted to get into a conversation with him because he was a younger fella. And I wanted to ask him how many people older than himself have that same problem, so to speak, but we didn't get into it, so I don't know. What are you going to do, right? I still got my fish fillet, so I was happy. As long as lucky. I got my fish fillet. You know?
You're lucky you got your fish fillet.
Yes, absolutely. So, let's see. Going back to something else I took from one of your articles, which you expressed this greatly, and you might have touched on it earlier, I think. I don't want to interrupt you. The difference between an appraisal and an opinion about something. Elaborate on that, because that's something I think people need to know about.
Well, an appraisal is exactly what you'd expect it to be, and people don't always get cars, but when I'm asked to explain it, I always give people the real estate analogy. And when somebody appraises your home, you know, they look at the home, they research comps or comparables of similar homes that have sold in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They get them from public records. They're actually sales. And that's an appraisal, and they rise to certain standards in the industry, just like anything would. And it's done exactly the same way with cars.
Right.
When somebody goes online and looks at eBay and says, I just saw a car sell for this amount, or there's one listed here for this amount, that's not an appraisal. That's an opinion. If they go to a dealer and say, what's the car worth? It's an opinion.
Yeah.
And there's actually a logical reason for it, and it's really all about transparency so that you can count on what the appraiser is saying.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I actually love to tell this story. I knew somebody who was trying to sell a particular car, and he couldn't get what he was asking for it. So he made up two cars and put them on eBay with a buy-it-now price of twice what he wanted for his car.
Oh.
So that anybody looking for his car would see his car as a bargain.
Wow.
And people, you know, so somebody would say, oh, but there's two of them on there for that amount, so his car's got it. You see this stuff all the time, you'd be surprised.
Makes you think about the ethics of advertising now, you know. Cause
there's no checks and balances.
Because that's a fictitious entity that he created.
And anybody can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I had another person I knew, and of course I'm not going to mention names. He had one of these companies where, you know, you donate junk cars.
Right.
And his business was legitimate. He did exactly what he was supposed to do with them. But on the getting the car side, he would put two ads in the newspaper with different phone numbers. So if you called the whichever phone number you called, you'd get an offer on the car, and then you'd call the other phone number 30 seconds later, and they'd give you a higher offer. And you'd say, well, I'm going to take the higher offer, but they were both his phone.
Right.
So appraisals are based on publicly recorded sales. They're transparent. Other people can see them. It's different from an opinion.
It kind of goes to show something I say to my kids. My kids are grown, but I still tell them, like, you can't trust anything that you see or even sometimes what you read. And certainly things that people are pitching to you.
Yeah.
Because there's probably an interest there, and it's their best interest.
Right.
So you always have to be. And the problem is now in this age, as it's easier to find more information, it's also harder to find the right information, I've found.
It's very hard to find the right information, and sometimes you even have to check out the person that you're dealing with, even if you hire someone to appraise a car.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you a funny...
How would someone do that, by the way?
You know, that's a good question. I guess reviews online, but the best thing that you can do really.
Which could be written by them.
It could be written by them, yeah. The best thing you can do is any legitimate appraiser is going to have a CV, you know, just a fancy name for a resume, because they're going to have worked for attorneys and insurance companies and finance companies.
Okay.
And the CV will have all of your credentials on it. And,
right.
But that just shows that they're credentialed. It doesn't really show that they're ethical. And it's the same with anything, whether it's a real estate or a car appraiser. You just have to hope for the best.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. But like, as I say, I guess rely on your network. I do that all the time, and I've told my kids that, yeah. You know, call your friends, call people you know in the business, and ask, hey, have you heard of this guy?
Yeah.
Or can you refer me to?
Right.
You know, it seems to be like we're going back to something I like, the way things were done back in the day, like when we were kids. It was a neighborhood type of a thing. You used the shoe guy because he was in town, and he might have referred you to his cousin.
Absolutely.
Who did, you know, and I think. Yeah, we're going back. We have to go back to that sometimes, which I think it's a good thing. Yeah.
I think that is a good way. I mean, there's a lot of credentialed people out there that, you know, personally, I have no problem saying this, I consider unethical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll give you one funny example if you'd like.
Sure, please.
As appraisers, we tend to find ourselves doing a lot of matrimonial work. People are getting divorced, and there's a collection of cars, and you know, you have to be politically correct today, but of course, these cars are usually the guy's cars. Usually, not
yes.
always. They're usually the guy's cars. There's one case I'm working on in Alaska right now where an appraiser appraised six cars for the wife, mm-hmm. Perfectly legitimate appraisals, and then a month later got a call from the husband and said, I want you to appraise these cars. Now, there's a conflict of interest there. He should have immediately said no,
but
he said yes. And he went and appraised the same cars. The husband wanted to keep the car, so he went and appraised the same cars at half the price that he appraised them for the wife.
Okay.
And you see that type of thing all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
Well, that at least, you know, I think that's got some, you can backtrack that. You see the same appraiser gave two appraisals in a short amount of time for the same vehicles, and one is half. So you have to question his ethics and his professional.
And they're being questioned in court right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, you know, what, were you blind this day, but you weren't the other day? Which day were you blind?
It goes even deeper than that. You sign certifications, first of all, saying that you won't do that, because if you do it for matrimonial purposes, there's a good chance you're going to get called into court to work for your client. If you do it for the husband and wife, who's your client?
Right.
You know, who's your client? And then you sign a certification saying that you have no financial interest in the car that you're appraising. And this particular appraiser then facilitated the sales of those six cars and got a commission.
Sure.
So you got to be careful. You do have to be careful.
Oh, boy. It can get sticky, I guess.
It can, just like with anything else.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, speaking of sticky, not particularly sticky, but with things changing. And things like that. We want to talk about winter a little bit and winterizing. You did a column a few weeks ago about winterizing. It was Steve Linden's theory. And I love this because you've spoke about it on this show, and I knew what I was going to read, but I read it anyway. And because I think it's great. We all have our own modified way of doing it. I don't think there's any one right or wrong way. Certainly there's some wrong ways, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
Run us down a little bit on your ideas for winterizing.
I call it my scientifically unproven method, and I do write that column every year because people write in when winter's coming asking me, what should I do? And a lot of it has to do with my own nature. So I like to put things away ready for me to turn the key in the spring and start driving and enjoying the car. So there's certainly, you know, nothing required about fixing little things that need to be fixed. But I always put that at the top of my list.
Mm-hmm.
Fix any little things that I've deferred. And then as far as the winterization process goes, it's fairly simple. I take a fuel stabilizer. Well, first of all, let me back up one step. I change the oil. Mm-hmm. So that the lower half of my engine is sitting in nice, fresh oil for the winter instead of, you know, oil that has byproducts of combustion, including acid, sitting in it. So I change the oil. Then I put usually a marine-grade fuel stabilizer in the fuel. I top up the fuel tank so it gets mixed in. I take it for a 10-mile ride so that the engine's, you know, bathed in this nice, fresh oil with this nice, fresh gas, with this nice, fresh stabilizer. So it gets through all the little passages in the carburetor for, you know, these cars that still have carburetors.
Carburetor, yeah.
Yep. And then I park it. And then I take an engine fogger. Sometimes I even use old Marvel Mystery Oil trick. Sometimes, not always. Depends on the car. And I start it until the smoke's coming out the exhaust. And I don't really know that that helps the inside of the engine very much if you've done everything else you're supposed to, but it helps the inside of the exhaust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's where they usually rot from the inside out. And
I think the fogger does help you because it kind of like it adheres.
It does.
Sticks, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I've never used one of those. I've never used a fogger. Never done that.
Yeah. I usually use Marvel Mystery Oil.
Uh-huh.
But you can actually get engine fogger.
Yes. That's correct.
And I don't really know which one's better, but I'll tell you, I've been doing this for, I don't want to tell you how many years, because that'll tell you how old I am. It's worked every single year. I get in, I turn the key, I start the engine, it fires right up.
Yeah. That age-long debate of changing the oil before you store it, or first thing, you know, when you take it out.
Right.
That's one that goes back and forth a lot.
Well, that's one I think I'm right about.
Yeah. Then I've heard people say, well, if you change the oil and then park the car, the acid formation is still there. There's still, you know, there's still going to be condensation through the window. Yeah, it's going to be there either way, I think.
It's going to be there either way, but there's, you know, one of the byproducts of combustion is a lot of condensation. So
yes.
If you have old oil in your car, one of the other things, one of the byproducts is acid.
Yes.
And, you know, I've rebuilt engines. I'm sure you've rebuilt engines, you know, and I've taken out, you know, bearings and crankshafts where you can actually see it etched from acid.
Sure.
And you don't see that when you see an engine that's been sitting in fresh oil. So,
right.
You know, again, scientifically unproven, but it's worked for me.
True. Very good. So. And I would tend to agree with that, too. There's we'll talk a little bit more about it. And if you want to get in on this with us, you can call us at 516-572-7440. We'll take our last break, and then we'll be back. And we'll wrap it up in our last segment. Ray Guarino with Steve Linden on 90.3 WHPC.
Your car not running right? Let the Motor Mounts help you out at 516-572-7440.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kaye, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
Coming up at 12 o'clock today, Sunday, Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Joe D, talking about cars. And like I said, you don't have to know anything about cars to enjoy the show. People watch cooking shows, don't know how to cook. People watch those home repair shows, they don't know how to fix anything. So Motormouth Radio is the same thing. Think about it that way.
All right, we are rocking with a little white zombie here on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Steve Linden's in the house. We're talking about cars and car concerns and winterizing and our thoughts and stuff on that. I was just saying how I like to kind of use the cars through the winter as much as I can. But which also ties into another thing, and I told my wife this, Steve, you know, because we're getting close to that point of retirement and moving on and, you know, another phase of life and all that good stuff and maybe even relocating, which is something that's definitely on the, you know, not off the table. It's definitely on there because of just finances and all. You know, it's expensive to live here.
Yeah. Yep.
And I said to my wife, I said, wherever we end up, whatever we do, wherever we go, I don't know. I don't care. I said, but the one thing I'd like to be able to do is I'd like to be able to take out any single car or truck or motorcycle at any time without moving any other vehicle. That's, I just want to be able to do that. You know, if I can do that, boy, and I don't have a big fleet. I'm not talking about 30, 40 cars, you know.
Right.
I would be very, very happy because now it's like a Chinese fire drill. All right, two cars or three cars got to come out the driveway before the one in the garage can get out. And,
right.
Or go to the other garage and get that one, leave one, take one. Ugh. Gets to be a pain.
Well, that would be a treat. Can you imagine that if you could actually pull that off?
I can imagine it, yes.
Yeah.
Whether I can imagine it ever happening to me,
right.
I don't know. Maybe not.
It is difficult here on Long Island. I mean, we both know a lot of people who collect cars, and storage space for cars is really one of the challenges here on Long Island.
And like I told you off air, with me, what I have in my driveway sitting there at the time, that's what I'm going to use.
Yeah.
And if it's in another garage, even though I know it's there, I'm not. It's, you know, out of sight, out of mind almost. And that's, you know, it's got to be easy to get to. It's got to be, you know, I mean, sometimes you wake up and you say, hey, I want to take the convertible.
Yeah.
You know, but if you have to go get it and go through these, you know, all these hoops and bells and whistles to do it, it's a pain in the neck.
It's so true. I have a convertible that I keep in a barn on my property. I call it a barn. It's been converted to a garage, but it's not the easiest thing to get in and out of because it was a barn originally.
Mm.
And I can't tell you how many times we've said, you know what? It's just not worth taking it out of the barn.
Right.
My wife yells at me for that all the time.
Now, that's the fabled Cougar.
Yes, that's the Cougar, exactly.
Great car. Yes. Well, I mean, I picture a barn as not hard to get in and out of. What makes it tough in your situation?
Well, first of all, it still has the original barn doors on it, so they swing out.
Okay.
And in front of it is a tree that you can just get past if you pull out and cut the wheel all the way. That wasn't a problem when it was used for horses, but it's a problem for a car.
Right.
So it's not as difficult as I'm making it sound, but it's not easy.
Well, no. You know what? No, the things, I know this, and I've told this to people, it can be a little thing.
Right.
And it's like that little thorn in you get a little sliver of metal in your finger, like, oh my God, it's all you can think of. It's just an annoyance to you, where it may not be to somebody. Have you ever thought of taking a tree down?
I have, but the tree's been there a very long time. I don't want to take the tree down.
Yes.
And, the other thing is, I know I'm just making excuses for myself, but when we use the car and we come back at night, it's hard to get it back into the barn because it's at the end of the property and it's not as well lit as it could be.
Uh-huh.
And it was a barn. I mean, it was a real barn, and it's not simple to get it in and out of. And
Harbor Freight sells these lights. I saw it at my friend's house. It's a square panel of LEDs.
Yeah.
And it has a solar cell.
Right.
That you put on the roof. And this thing lights up. He has it over a garage light. That thing. I went out and bought one. I was like, that's a great way to put lighting where you wouldn't normally have it, and you don't have to hardwire it. It's solar powered.
I'm really making excuses. My barn has lights. It's got floodlights and everything.
But
it's also a matter of driving up the driveway to the barn that's not lit.
Right.
So it's really just, don't get me. They're excuses. There's no excuse for not using it.
I got you. Because listen, we all do the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's been times I'm like, I think this is what I want. And then I think of it like, okay, if I got to do all that to get it out, I got to do all this to put it back in again. And, get it in the right way. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yep.
Please, we all go through that. But, winterizing. Now is the time where you really want to look into winterizing your vehicle. And something I want to mention that I recommend. We just were out with friends dinner last night, and we were talking about this. And a couple of these guys had gotten bitten by the malady. Have the brake fluid flushed and changed on your vehicles, especially your newer vehicles, like every 2 years or 3 years at most. I showed a picture. I'll show it to you off air of my wife's 2012. And I had it in the shop yesterday because I wanted to do some maintenance. I wanted to do an oil change and tire rotation. And I said, let me flush the brakes while I'm here. And I did. And I'm thinking to myself, gee, did I do this last year or 2 years ago? I thought it was last year. And the brake fluid I took out now is brown, dirty.
Really?
I mean, now I have litmus paper tests. I could have tested it. I have an hygrometer. I could have tested it with that, and I did not. But the point is, it happens fast. It doesn't take that long for brake fluid.
I didn't know that.
And it's hygroscopic, which means that
attracts moisture.
It wicks moisture, which is what the killer is.
Right.
There's your killer. But I always wondered what is it that makes brake fluid black? It's in a sealed system. So how does it change color? What happens? And what it is it's copper that leaches off the washers and the fittings and the insides of the brake lines, and as well as particulate from the rubber hoses and whatnot. It all happens in that sealed system, and evidenced by you see it, so you know what happens. Your brakes can feel fine. It's the type of thing where as they degrade in performance, as you drive the car every day, you don't notice it because it happens very slowly.
Right.
But the problem that, and one of my buddies last night had this happen with a car that his son's driving, the ABS controller went bad. And they are, they don't sell them rebuilt yet, which I don't know. I think there's going to be a cottage industry for those.
Right.
And they're probably between $600 to $900 or more to buy one.
And then to have it put in, sometimes they're not in the easiest places to get at. There's a lot of labor involved. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that system's going to get flushed again, and there may be other work to be. You're going to be in for a bill, you know. And you're not going to have to pay. And the thing is, if the fluid was flushed every couple of years, that could be avoided. I mean, there could still be a mechanical failure on a part. It's, you know, I'm not saying there isn't, but a lot of these failures, and through the tech articles I read, is from failure to flush that brake fluid.
That's interesting. You know, you mentioned a good point. I don't know a lot about the newer cars, especially the ABS brake systems, but I do know that you can use the ABS pump to flush the brakes. Now, if your ABS system fails, can you still flush the brakes?
Yes.
You can flush what's in that pump?
Yeah. Now, there's also another way of doing it on a new car, and this is what I need to go back and do on my wife's car. You can do what's called a computer bleed. You need a scanner that to do this, and it's got to be, it's not a code reader, a $10 code reader, it's not a low-level scanner. It's got to be one of the better scanners, better scan tools that are out there. And what you do is you plug it into the car, and you access the brake menu and the ABS menu, and you say brake bleed. And what it'll do is it'll have you do a couple things, key on, foot on the brake, and then it'll actually actuate those solenoids. You'll hear things going,
right,
noises. The brake pedal may move, and it'll tell you, keep foot on brake, release brake. It'll go through a system of checks and things that it does with all by itself. And then they do recommend, though, at least in for the Chevy, to perform a manual brake bleed after that, just to make sure.
But when you're doing that, what you just described, do you actually have the bleeder open and fresh fluid going in?
Everything,
so it's all done internally.
You're
sitting
in the car with the scanner. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's doing things like potentially purging air, but it's not changing the fluid.
No, it's not. And I'd asked Joe this a while ago, about a year or two ago. I said, okay, it says it's removing microscopic air bubbles. I said, but we're in a sealed system. Where are they going? There's no opening. We don't have a bleeder valve open. We have nothing open.
Yeah.
And he said to me the best that he knew was they're microscopic. So, you know, air, it's fluid dynamics. Air wants to rise in fluid.
Right.
Is what happens.
Yep.
So the system, what it's doing is breaking up any air bubbles that it may be able to find. And then maybe it's like electrolysis. Breaks them up into smaller particles, which then just can be dispersed and maybe find little, maybe that can ride on the line. Instead of a big bubble, it's just a little tiny thing. That's why they say sometimes they recommend doing a manual bleed afterwards. So I didn't do that yesterday with my wife's car. I didn't have the chance to do it. But the brake, and now that's separate than a, it's part of, but not inclusive to, a brake fluid flush. You still should flush the old fluid out and fill it with new fluid, and that should be done. You know, I do this when I pull a car into the driveway, whether it's mine, my daughter's, you know, mm-hmm. anybody's, and I have a turkey baster in my toolbox,
yep.
and I'll just suck the fluid out of the master cylinder reservoir,
right,
and then refill that. Mm-hmm. That's almost 80% of the fluid in a non-ABS car.
I can believe it.
And you just took that out and put fresh fluid. So even, and if you did that like every couple of months,
right,
you may have effectively changed 90% or so of the fluid.
Right.
On a non-ABS car, because ABS car, there's a lot more nooks and crannies and places that stuff can be
interesting stuck.
So that's my tip, is definitely pay attention to that brake fluid. It's very, very important.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned sealed. They're not sealed. We know they're not sealed because, as you mentioned earlier, the brake fluid's hygroscopic, so it's taking the moisture from the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So in theory, it's sealed, but it's not really sealed.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yep.
Speaking of being unsealed... DJ Scholes just walked in the studio. What's happening, Chris?
Not much. How are you?
Good. Oh, Kim, I was just going to ask you. I had a CD that was in number two that was wouldn't come out. Did you get that? It gave me an error message and it wouldn't come out. You were doing a live remote today.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. How's it going?
I was actually live this time.
Yes.
I wasn't on the board. I actually had a board operator.
Oh, cool. How'd that feel?
Felt good.
Okay. Meet Mr. Steve Linden.
Hello there.
Chris, pleasure.
The car doctor from Newsday.
Wow.
Yes.
What an honor. That's pretty. You have a PhD in cars?
Steve's a good friend of the show. We've been wrangling him in here for years to talk about this stuff. And when we need expert advice, we know where to go.
Yeah. I'll definitely make sure I call one of you two.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I actually have a quick question, though, about my car real quick.
Okay, got about a minute. Go.
Whenever I'm turning my steering wheel recently, it's starting to, like, my entire steering shaft is, or my driving, it just shakes. And it makes a large, like, noise.
Oh, I know the answer.
Okay, go.
There's a loose nut behind the wheel.
Yeah, that's typically the problem.
Now, recently, my car had one of those malfunctions where I couldn't, where it was just driving on its own.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just recently, I had that problem.
My mother, the car. Is it a 1922 Porter? Or a 20, whatever?
I don't know if I would call a car that can drive on its own a malfunction.
Yeah, that's...
Wow.
If you want
that's impressive.
It is, yeah.
I mean, it was
it's not supposed to.
It's not supposed to. I don't think it was supposed to, but I was having a hard time braking, and my steering was messed up.
Really?
And I think that's what happened.
All right, I have a couple thoughts. We don't have time now, because we got to go. Kim is coming on with Thunder Road, Best of Springsteen, so stay tuned for that. We're going to talk off-air, because I have a couple ideas that may help. And, Steve, thank you for coming in. It was a pleasure,
my pleasure.
As always.
Yes,
and
thank you.
And we're working on a guest for next week. We're going to see who we can line up. Yo, Chris, you're always welcome to pop in.
Yeah, I'll definitely come in next Sunday.
And for now, stay tuned for Kim Thunder Road, and we'll see you next week with more Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 WHPC.